I am Frances Goodman, an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I'm real grateful to be here and be sober. Not too grateful to be standing up here right this minute, but anyway, they say you need to be willing to try to do whatever they ask you to do in this program, so here we are. I will try to tell you what it was like with me. I want to say, in case I forget, if there are any new people here this morning, what you're going to hear me tell, it doesn't have to be that way. I have had trouble with the program. I have found my way back and can live happily sober one day at a time now. But I had a hard time doing this, as you're going to find out, if God will help me to remember to tell you what it really was like. I grew up in a normal, happy home. We were just middle-class people. I was born and raised in the home that my mother and father still live in. I had a stable childhood, I'm sure. Always I was close to my father, and I will tell you later, he's a real important person in my life because he's the only person that was always there. No matter how bad I got or what I did, he was always there. And growing up, I was real close to him. He raised tobacco, beef cattle, and a dairy, and I knew how to do all three, and I loved him. I went everywhere he did. And I still feel that way about him today. We're real close. Anyway, I grew up normal, had the things you need. I was a happy child, I think. Always a rebellious child. I never liked to do what anybody told me to do. And today I still have trouble doing what I'm told to do. Maybe that's why I had so much trouble with this program. I couldn't follow directions and I couldn't do what you told me to do. But anyway, went to high school, got out of high school, and I wanted to leave home so I could do what I wanted to do. My mother was real strict. She didn't allow me to do anything. Growing up and in high school, I didn't know what a drink of whiskey was. I never had a drink. We may have had wine. I think I heard the lady talk yesterday, and I thought, we never drank in my home, and really we didn't. But there was wine and eggnog at Christmas or whatever, you know. But we were not drinking people, really. And in high school, I didn't drink, didn't think about drinking, didn't run with the drinking crowd, and I couldn't have gone home if I did drink. And by 10 o'clock, I was home. You could book that on. So I didn't do any drinking in high school, and I married young, and almost a year later, I had one son, and he's the only child I ever had. We married too young. The marriage did not work out. And there may have been drinking a little bit in my first marriage. Maybe to a party, I had a drink and I didn't care about it one way or the other. I didn't immediately get drunk. But this marriage ended when my son was about 3 years old. And I was away from home with a child. I worked. I was still fairly young, and then I finally got my chance to do what I wanted to do. I enjoyed running around, I enjoyed drinking, and I did all of these things and took care of my child. And not long after I started to drink, drinking became a real important thing in my life. Looking back on my life, I picked out the things to do and the places to go where I could drink. If they weren't drinking and they weren't having a good time, I didn't really care to go. And my drinking became a problem early on. I drank too much every time I drank. I never went home If there was no liquor at home, I took some home with me. It was real important to me to never be without alcohol. But I didn't know what alcoholism was, and I didn't drink in the morning or in the daytime or anything. I was just a heavy drinker. And this continued on. And then I met my second husband, and we got married. He was military life. He was from the little town of Franklin where I was born and raised. He was of the blue blood line. I got introduced to the country clubs. He came from the famous Carter House family tree there in Franklin. And at the country club, you get to drink a lot, and I liked that. It was neat. It was good. And we got married, and we were going to live military life. Unfortunately for me, him, and end our marriage, he got shipped out to Korea for 2 years, and I stayed in the little town of Franklin. And I worked, I took care of my son, and I drank. And I drank more and more, and I did a lot of things to my second husband that I had to learn to live with later. The more things I did to this man, I never did really understand why he did all of the things he did. But the worse I got and the more I did to him, the harder he tried to help me and to get me straightened out. And everything he tried to do to help me only made me worse. I drank worse and I got worse. He came back from Korea at the end of his 2 years, and we packed up all of our belongings and we moved to a little town, Fayetteville, North Carolina. And there my drinking became so horrible. He would come in and he wouldn't know if I would be there or if I would go out. Back then, I think of Piedmont Airlines. Now I get tickled when I see them flying around in the air. Back at this particular time, Piedmont Airlines was a little bitty airplane and it wasn't pressurized. And I think you went in a field somewhere to go catch it out of that god-awful place, you know. But I would get on this little dinky airplane with my child, and I'd be drinking. And then I'd make it to the big airport in Atlanta, you know. And then I could drop off at Nashville, leave my child with my parents. He would never know when I was coming back, you know. But every time I came back, there he was. He would understand. And really and truly, when you're married to that kind of person, it'll nearly kill you, you know. They just won't give up, you know. They will not let you go. He just knew if he kept trying, like Joanne said, he could straighten me out, you know. And this went on and on and on and got worse, of course. And he would send me to psychiatrists, and they would talk to me, you know. He never thought I had a drinking problem. He just thought that I needed to settle down. You know, you have everything in the world you need. Why can't you just do this, you know? And there, too, you live the good life. Military life's great if you like to drink because they do a lot of drinking. I could play bridge in the mornings and we drank, or we could play golf and we drank. And in the afternoon, if you didn't play golf, you played bridge, and then that night you go to the cocktail party, and it's just one continuous drinking thing. If you're in military life and your husband's an officer, so long about now, he had become a major, I think, in the Army. But he still did everything he could do to try to help me, and nothing would help. So finally, the psychiatrist told this man that all I wanted to do was for him to let me have a divorce, and that was just it. He went to one, and I went to one, and it got worse. But every time, always the bottom line was, all I wanted was to be let go again so I could go do what I wanted to do. And Finally, he did give me a divorce. Then I moved back to Franklin again. He moved me and my son and all of our furniture. And he gave me a beautiful home in Franklin. And he continued to try to do everything he could do to help me to get better. And nothing worked. Some years went by and my drinking got continually worse. I got a job at Third National Bank after I moved back to Franklin. I lived there and commuted back and forth to Nashville. And some of the worst drinking I ever did in my life, I did while I worked at Third National Bank. But the second husband still never quite went away. He was always around trying to see if he couldn't help me to get better. The man did love me, I know that today. We dated again somewhere along in here, and he wanted to get married again. And I didn't want to because I knew what was wrong with me and I knew that he couldn't fix it. I didn't know that I was an alcoholic. I thought I was just a no-good, loose woman, you know, that wanted to live the way she wanted to live. And anyway, nothing would do him, but this is what we should do. And I agreed, okay, we'll do this. So I was to marry him again, and on his third voluntary trip in early 1966 to Vietnam, he didn't come back. He was a Green Beret and all that gung-ho military business, you know, and he was killed that trip. He did not come back. So I didn't have anybody to really look after me and try to take care of me during this particular period. I went through a great deal of grief and guilt, and I've dealt with all of that today, and that's okay. But anyway, I was on my own now. I had to find a way to live in this world, and I was still working at Third National Bank, and my drinking was so bad that I might could go 6 months without having to go to the hospital. I wouldn't eat, I would get dehydrated, and I would have to go to the hospital. And at this time, I don't think that Third National Bank knew that I had a drinking problem. I was not drinking on my job at that time, but I was having to go into the hospital because I was not able to keep my body to where I could function and work. So I went into the hospital. Must have not been long after he was killed. My drinking got real bad there. Again, I had a good excuse, you know. And I went into the Williamson County Hospital again. I'd always had a doctor who never talked to me about drinking. He never said a word about I had a drinking problem. He put down everything on my insurance papers that you, all of you, I'm sure, have had the same thing put on yours. But drinking was not mentioned. I had to go this time. I had strep throat, and I'd been drinking bourbon whiskey and water, and my throat had swollen together, and I called a doctor that I had never been to before. And in this condition, I had DTs for the first time in my life. I want to regress a moment. I'm no good at this. I'm not a speaker. I forgot to tell you that prior to 1966, AA had been mentioned to me, and it was suggested that I go. This is real important to me, and I don't want to forget it, because I see a lot of people come around this program, and they compare. They say, well, this didn't happen to me, and this, you know. So I went to some meetings back in 1964 there somewhere, and I went to 407 and a half Union Street in Nashville. An old AA club room that we had there. And I went there and I heard all of these horrible stories of all of these things that had happened to these people. They'd lost jobs, wrecked cars, had DTs. drank all day, drank in the morning, and I didn't understand none of that stuff because I didn't do any of those things, and I really didn't in 1964. But by 1966, this is when the things started to happen to me. I was in this hospital in Williamson County, and I went into DTs that lasted some 6-8 hours, and I'm sure they didn't know a lot about what to do. They did the best they could. I didn't have any no crawling animals in my DTs. They were live people. They were my family. And I saw horrible things done to them, and I will never forget it as long as I live. I'm thankful to God this morning that I've never had to live through DTs but that one time. But anyway, that's what happened to me that time. And when they got ready to take me home, the doctor told my family I was in no condition to go back to work, that I needed to go somewhere and try to get better before I went back to work. So the bank agreed, and I still get amused at what they told me when they talked to me. They said, you can have your 6 weeks. You can go wherever you need. You can get well. You can come back to work. But you can't drink anymore. If you drink again, that's it. Guaranteed an alcoholic will drink again. So I took my 6 weeks. I went away. They found this place in Memphis, and I really don't know the name of it. But it's on the 6th floor, and it is not like treatment centers. They teach you about alcoholism. You learn a lot. You see a lot of films. You go to a lot of, can't think of the word, but you know where you talk. And they did a lot of things, but they didn't really tell me anything about the disease of alcoholism or what to do about it, you know. But anyway, I went to this place, and right before I had the DTs this time in Williamson County Hospital, and they also told me I couldn't come back there again if I was drinking. Your private hospitals don't want your business. Once you've had DTs, you just got to find something else to do. And I went to this place, though, before I went, what I started to tell you, right before this started happening to me in that hospital, I remember taking an orange capsule they gave me. I found out later they called it Thorazine. This is how sick we really can be. I thought Thorazine gave me these things, whatever I had. Wasn't the alcohol I drank, it was that pill, you know. And for years, scared to death of pills. Thank God I was scared to death of pills. You know, I didn't want nobody's pills. You could do, you pour me anything and I'm drinking, but I didn't want your pills, you know. But I went to this place in Memphis, and I learned a lot about alcoholism. They told me I had slight liver damage there. They do a lot of medical tests on you. And then they let me come back to the Friendly Third National Bank to work. And I lasted from June of 66, I think, until maybe July. I didn't last a month, you know. So they had to let me go. For the first time in my life, I had had DTs, and now I'd lost my job, and I was so sick, and my family didn't know anything about alcoholism or treatment centers. And at that time, Central State, now they have a pretty name for it. I used to call it the Insane Asylum, and I still do, because I was insane when I went there, and this program has taught me how to be a little bit sane, but I don't make fun when I say that it was the Insane Asylum, but that was what we always thought of this place as, and that's what it was to my father. The hardest thing I ever saw him have to do was to take me to this place, you know. At that time, they didn't even have an alcoholic ward at Central State. I was taken to a place called a farmer building, and I was locked in a locked ward with people who were so sick. You cannot believe how sick these people really were. They would bang their heads on these bars, and they didn't even know what they were doing, but that is where I went. And as I went on and drank, I went there that year, and then I went back again that same year. When I drank, I got real crazy, and I was not able to cope. I didn't have my job. Things were really bad for me at this particular time in my life. And I went back to this place a second time, and then somebody told me, I don't even know who, somebody told me there was an AA meeting downstairs in the men's ward. Everything back then was for the men, boys. Cumberland Heights was for the men. The alcoholic ward was for the men. Everything was for the men back then, but thank God it's not that way today. Anyway, they told me about this AA meeting, and I went down there in November of 1966. I don't remember who came with George G. from Nashville, but he came to that AA meeting that night, and he read How It Works, and I heard it for the first time. I had been to a few AA meetings in 64 and maybe 65. That's all vague to me. I would tell you everything about me except so many things I don't remember, and maybe that's good. I don't know. But I heard him read How It Works. And I knew, you know, at that particular time in my life, I knew that I could get sober. So I came out of that place, and I started attending AA meetings. I would go to 7 meetings a week. I worked temporary work, and did the best that I could do at that time. Finally, I don't know what month, but right soon after that, with the help of some real understanding people, they gave me my job back at Third National Bank. They gave me back a better job than the job I had. They gave me 13 girls to work for me, and I did good. I loved it. It helped me to get sober in 1966. By then it was 67, I'm sure, when I got my job back, because some little time went by there. But anyway, I got involved in the program. Looking back, I know that I didn't do what the book tells me to do. I did not follow the instructions the way they should be. I went light on the things that hurt, and I let them lay there, and I didn't take care of them. But I was active around the program. I remember one of the most fun trips I ever took was with my friend Rufus over here. And a bunch of us went to an assembly meeting. I went a lot. I had a lot of fun in AA, but I didn't do a lot of the things that are necessary if you truly want to stay sober. I did not take care of me in here. So anyway, I went back to work at this bank and was able, no way could I make amends to all of these people because I had drank on my job. You know, it's a wonder on coffee break I didn't get picked up speeding on foot, going to the liquor store and trying to get back, you know, before they missed me and I could have a drink. You work at a bank, you got to write, you know, and I'd be writing along and my hand would get over here and then it would just go straight down the page. And I knew I had to go. And I heard last night, it was not, do you want to drink? I had to drink. And I did. And that's the way it was with me. But these people there saw me in a lot of terrible shapes. All told, I think I worked at that place like 12 years or something. anyway, everybody knew you, and they'd see such a little half pint down in the women's restroom stalls, you know, while you got your cup of water, and it was just a mess. But anyway, by the grace of God, I was allowed to go back here to work for a period of time and not tell these people, but show these people that AA would work in my life and that I could stay sober. And I was able to regain some of the respect of a lot of people that I had lost and a little bit of my own self-respect. And that was good for me. In June of 1969, I met this tall, good-looking man, and I fell in love with him. And he paid me back, I assure you, for every wrong I ever did, my second husband. He wasn't a bad drinker, but he did love pills. I didn't really know a lot about pills. But this guy was a con artist, if one ever lived, and he was beautiful, and I loved wherever he was at, you know. And I quit my job at Third National Bank in June of 1969. And I married this tall, good-looking man, and I stored some furniture and I took some with me and we went whipping off to the West Palm Beach, Florida is where we went to live. And he told me he had this wonderful job there and that everything was going to be great. First off, I should have known anybody that tall and that good looking didn't need me for a wife, you know. I should have suspected something's wrong right there. But anyway, this man was a real sick person. I moved to West Palm Beach, Florida, like I said, in June of 1969. It was the worst thing probably that ever happened to me in many ways. I did not go to AA when I went to West Palm Beach, Florida, and that was my first and most tragic mistake. I had stayed around the program, maybe not working it the way I should, but at least I stayed in touch with AA as long as I was around Nashville those first almost 3 years. But I moved to West Palm Beach, Florida, and I didn't go to AA. I tried to make this tall, good-looking husband happy, you know. And when we got there, the job he told me he had, he didn't have. And he did go to work, and things went from bad to worse and worse. I stayed dry or sober from June till after my November 22, 66 was my first dry date. Sometime after that, before the first of the year, we had had a lot of problems, and I found out he was taking as much as 30 of these, some kind of speed pills. He called them pancakes, but I don't know. Anyway, he would take these things, and he would get real crazy. One night in particular, I remember at this point in my life, things were real bad. I couldn't go back to Nashville to Third National Bank because I had married this wonderful man, you know, and I couldn't go back and tell those people that I wanted to work there again, that this was a mess. And things were bad, and I had not stuck close to AA, and so I drank again. I was drinking the night this happened to me. He had took a bottle of speed, or whatever you call it, and he had drank some, and I was drinking. And the guy was hallucinating, and I don't think he meant to do what he did, but he did it anyway. We came back from the beach, and there was a pistol in the glove compartment of my car. And he thought somebody was under the floor mats or something. Anyway, I had the dry cleaning in my hand, I remember that. And the wind blew. And he just turned with the pistol and he shot in the wind and it hit me here. And it took me about 3 hours. And this is the insanity of alcoholism. I couldn't make him understand that he had hurt me. So I went in where we lived and I sat down at the kitchen table with this bottle and I thought, well, this is, you know, you die, you're shot and you die. And I thought, really, that's the way it is. And I didn't care. I really didn't care. And I sat down and I drank some more. And when he woke up, he slept a while, and when he woke up, he really did not remember what he did. I believe that today. But anyway, as things worked out, I went to the hospital, and they didn't know if you'll live or you'll die, and I didn't die. Of course, I'm here. And right now I wish I had that. But anyway, I did get better. They could not remove the bullet. Part of it lodged here, and then this they took out later, but it broke the bones in here, and it was real bad. But I came back to Tennessee with this man, and I kept drinking real bad. And I tried to figure out a way that I could shoot him the same way he did me. I didn't want him to die. I wanted him to be screwed up like me. My mouth wouldn't open, you know. But that all finally got better. And anyway, after much drinking and much hard times with this third husband, I finally decided that I wanted him to leave. I couldn't live with him. And you wonder why I kept him around anyway after what he did to me. Well, that's the insanity of alcoholism. I intended to punish him, and I did real good. He'd wake up in the night, and I'd be sitting down at the foot of that bed with that pistol. It was terrible. Anyway, I was to make some more trips to Central State. I came back to Nashville, and after I had enough of all this mess with him, I was able to get him out of my life. And by the way, I've had no desire to get married since husband number three, and that was a long time ago. But he broke me of my getting married habit. And anyway, after that, I did have to go back to Central State some more trips. I wrecked many cars, I drank real bad, and I got real sick. And I guess I started that drunk in December of 1969, and in June of 1971, I was able to come back to this program again. Out of Central State, by that time, they did have an alcoholic unit, and that was some help. I went through all of the things that all of you have gone through when you have to sober up. It's all necessary. You think you're going to die, wish you would, but you don't. I got out of there and came back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got active in the program again. And again, I failed to do all of the things that are necessary for me to stay sober. There were things that I needed to do and I could not do. But I went on to AA and did the best at that time that I could do, I guess. But once again, I let other things become more important in my life. Rufus and I were talking a while ago, and I said, yes, I know I gave myself a lot of trouble, and I know why a lot of my trouble happened. I never really put this program first in my life. There were other things more important in my life. After husband number three, I was right at the door of bankruptcy. I had lost that house. I'd lost everything I ever had. And I thought it was necessary that I make money. You know, I wanted my things back. You know how we are about our stuff. I wanted my stuff back. It was more important to me to work and make money night and day than it was to really get into this program and learn how to live happily sober. As I said, my second time in AA was in June of 1971. And I stayed around AA, not real active, but I did come around. And I did this for some 5 years. And then I drifted away from AA completely. AA interfered with my working. I needed to work night and day because I wanted my things, and I got some of them, and I've lost some of them, you know. But anyway, that is what I did. The program did not leave me. I left it just flat cold. I didn't talk to anybody. didn't want to talk to anybody. I was busy. I had to work and sleep, and that's all I had time to do, and that's all I did. And I did this for a long, long time. And then in 1979, I had pneumonia 3 times, and my lung doctor says, if you want to live, you have to quit all this working you're doing. It's insanity. And I said, okay, I'll quit working. So I quit everything except my job at General Electric. And 1979, that's all I was doing, but I still didn't bother about AA. By then, I had drifted away. I didn't think about this program. I used none of it in my life. It was just not there. The only person in the program I ever talked to was George. He called about once a month. How are you? I'm great. And how are you? And that was that, you know. But he was the only person around the program that I ever had any contact with at all. And it was just a polite conversation. You know, I didn't care. It was, I just didn't think that I needed that in my life anymore. But sometime in the fall of 1979, I wasn't having a good day or a bad day, and there was nothing good or bad going on in my life. But I left my job that afternoon. I dropped in at the Kroger store on the way home, and I took me a 6-pack of beer, not for whoever came by, but for me. And I knew I bought it for me. And I went home and sat down at the kitchen table, and I popped the top on a, and I never was a beer drinker in my life, you know, but this is what I did that day. I popped the top on that beer and knew when I did it. Nobody had to remind me. I knew where I was going. I didn't know what day I would get there or how long it would take me, but I knew what I would have to go through one more time. I would either have to sober up or die, one or the other. And I fooled around with this mess from the fall of 79. Thought I had it figured out. I never ate when I drank, so I figured if I would eat a lot, drink a little, you know how we con ourselves. So I drink 2 beers and eat 2 meals, and then I drink 3 and eat another meal, you know, and it was real crazy, and I just got real drunk and real fat, and it was just a mess, really. It was just terrible. Anyway, from the fall of 79, and I can't tell you exactly what month I would if I could remember, but I do not remember. Anyway, this continued on until September of 1980. I got in a great deal of trouble at General Electric. As long as I drank the beer and ate all that food, I wasn't drinking on my job at first, but of course, you all know what happened to me. I rocked along, and then it got to where it was just like at the bank, the same thing. It all was, nothing changed, except I got a whole lot sicker, and things were a whole lot worse for me this last time. But I would leave my job, and I would go drink. I'd drink before I went to work, and I couldn't go. I could not go from 8 o'clock in the morning until lunch break. I couldn't make it. I would have to leave that place and go get me something to drink. So, of course, I got to where I didn't show up at work at all. I'd fall down drunk in the bathroom. I just really got drunk at General Electric. But I'd been around there sober for a long time, and hell, I deserved it, you know. It just didn't matter, you know. But then the people that I worked with, you're always in General Electric. George can tell you, you have to answer way on up. You know, they're off someplace in space. I don't know where the real bosses are, but anyway. You could get away with these local people, but then the ones out of town start finding, they call up and you're not really okay on the telephone, you know. And anyway, things got real bad at General Electric. And I think had we not been in an interim period where we didn't have a commercial, as long as I'd been around this program, as much as I should have known, but my mind was so sick by September 1980 I never thought I have good insurance that would have paid every dime for a trip to Cumberland Heights or anywhere I wanted to go. It never occurred to me, never once. So things got worse, and they had talked to me a couple of times, wanting to know if there was anything they could do to help me, you know, anything they would do to help me. And I would always say, no, all I have to do is quit drinking, and I can handle that, you know. And when they came the weekend before, the 7th of September, though, they came on Friday, and when they take you away from the office for a meeting, you know it's real serious. You can talk at the office about most things, but serious trouble, they take you away and you meet and they tell you how it is. So the guy told me, he said, it's down to this. And really I had not worked about 6 months of that year, and we're just into September, you know. And he told me, he said, you have to straighten out. You know, you have to be here Monday morning. Don't care what kind of shape you're in. You be here, not drinking. So I called my son when I got home that night and asked him to come and get me. I said, I have to be at work Monday morning, not drinking. And I had given my son some horrible times during all of this. He knew what I was doing to me. And he'd come, break down the door, pour out the whiskey, you know how they do, and it doesn't work. But anyway, he knew when I called him that I was in trouble. And by the time he got there, I didn't want to go. And of course, I was opened up another fifth and didn't really want to go to his house. But he came in, and he's a huge person. He's a great big man. So he picked up me under his arm and didn't put me in the car. He threw me in the car, and he took me over to his house. And that's the most awful weekend, I think, that I've ever spent. That was the weekend of the 7th of September, 1980. But anyway, I lived through that weekend. I still have my job at General Electric. I'm an active member of my group. I love my group. It's the Fellowship Group from Nashville, Tennessee. I think that butt bucket and those ashtrays belong to me. It's okay. Whatever I'm asked to do in my group, I try to do that. I've taken the big book and I've done what it tells me I have to do to stay sober. And a lot of these things were not easy for me, but I have done what the big book tells me I have to do if I want to live happily sober. And today, that's the way I live, is happily sober. I was not able, at the times when I was in this program before, to be truly honest with myself, to look at me as I really am. And it's hard for me to talk about how I really am. But I know today, by the grace of God and this program, I am not that person anymore. I even like me today. I'm able to love me, and I'm able to love all of you. And all of this has been given to me since I found this program in September of 1980. There really is no way to tell you how grateful I truly am. I used to regret, you know. I'd say, you could have been sober since 1966, but that doesn't matter. For this drunk, whatever happened to me, I'm assuming had to be necessary. I know today that God won't put anything in my path that he and I can't handle. And I live pretty much free of fear. When I first came back to this program in 1980, I was scared to death. It was a year, a good year, before I ever found any peace of mind at all. It was hard for me to come back in 1980. That's why the tougher things get for me out there now, the harder I try, because I know what a terrible time I had finding my way back to this program in 1980. I didn't just wander in, take a seat, and get sober. I wandered in, took a seat, and did not drink, and that's a fact. But I just thought, never would I know peace of mind again. Never would I be able to feel that I could get in my car and just do simple things. When you sober up from being as drunk as I've been for as long as I have, since I found this program in September of 1980, there really is no way to tell you how grateful I truly am. I used to regret, you know, I'd say, you could have been sober since 1966, but that doesn't matter. For this drunk, whatever happened to me, I'm assuming had to be necessary. I know today that God won't put anything in my path that he and I can't handle, and I live pretty much free of fear. When I first came back to this program in 1980, I was scared to death. It was a year, a good year, before I ever found any peace of mind at all. It was hard for me to come back in 1980. That's why the tougher things get for me out there now, the harder I try, because I know what a terrible time I had finding my way back to this program in 1980. I didn't just wander in, take a seat, and get sober. I wandered in, took a seat, and did not drink, and that's a fact. But I just thought, never would I know peace of mind again. Never would I be able to feel that I could get in my car and just do simple things. When you sober up from being as drunk as I've been for as long as I have been, on your job with telephones ringing and people running all around you, you know, and you got cold sweats and you're shaking. And this is how I sobered up in September of 1980, on my job. And those people knew what was wrong with me. At the time, it bothered me a great deal. Today, it don't bother me at all. I still work at the same place. I hang my head high and I'm a happy gal. And all of this has been given to me by the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I would not be here today were it not for this program. By the time I had found my way back here, I was real sick. I wish I'd had time to tell you about what those last months of drinking were like. If you think alcohol won't surely fail you, hang in there, it will. I got to the place that I could not get drunk and I could not get sober and I couldn't even sleep. And I don't know how your body stands that kind of punishment, but it did. But there is nothing in a bottle for me anymore. I know what comes first in my life today. It's not trying to get back my little things or my stuff. It is for me to live sober one day at a time with God's help and the help of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.